Welcome to the premiere episode of Joint Session, Diverse Voices in New York State Cannabis. I'm Herb Barbeau, the first director of operations at the Office of Cannabis Management. I was among the founding group of hires at OCM starting in December of 2021. My goal with this podcast is to cover cannabis activity in New York State and across the country. I hope to speak with unique, high-level, and knowledgeable guests to provide you with accurate and interesting information. For those of you new to this topic, the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, which created OCM, was enacted in March of 2021. However, the office did not begin to be staffed until December of that year. By the following year, the first dispensary opened in December of 2022. Since then, lawsuits and other issues have dominated the news. Despite that, at this point, a little over 100 stores have opened. What does the future hold? Some are positive, some aren't, but this is New York. Everyone has an opinion. We'll begin the episode with a spin around some headline news. First, a headline I hope never to read of New York. The California State Auditor called for better local cannabis permitting practices in order to prevent corruption, of which apparently there has been quite a bit. Closer to home, both the New York Cannabis Control Board and the New Jersey Cannabis Regulatory Commission will meet on April 11th. Florida will have an adult use measure on the ballot in November, while adult use stalled in Hawaii. In South Carolina, a push for medical cannabis continues. Thanks to Cannabis Wire for that news. Subscribe at cannabiswire.com. In deciding to do this podcast, I could think of only one person to be the first guest on Joint Session. That person is Crystal People Stokes, Majority Leader of the New York State Assembly, representing Buffalo, and the force behind the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. In this episode, we talk about the review team that was recently appointed by Governor Hochul to examine the work of the Office of Cannabis Management. We talk about the suspension of the agency's chief equity officer, as well as the future leadership of the agency. Hello, Crystal. Thank you for making this effort. And we are having this discussion following the third anniversary of the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, of which you were a prime sponsor and a leading force behind its enactment. Now, just, you know, to discuss some of the current events with regards to OCM, you know, OCM just can't seem to catch a break, right? This is one lawsuit, you know, following another. And it's not often that lawyers and judges, you know, get to hear directly from legislators and get to hear what the legislative intent was. Can you talk a little bit about what your vision for this industry was in New York State?
Well, I think in your opening comments, you're probably exactly right that OCM just cannot catch a break here. And first of all, realizing that what they are charged to accomplish is a mammoth responsibility. It's a brand new agency that's never happened before in the state of New York to create the Office of Cannabis Management, to combine it with the existing medical marijuana from the health department, as well as the existing hemp program from the agriculture department. Just those things alone are huge in order to be able to get done. But when you add in the fact that you got to work with the civil service system, you got to work with tax and finance, you got to work with all these multiple other agents, including Office of State Governments, it even becomes a more broader and a bigger problem. When I heard things like it takes 6 to 8 months to get an okay for a job description from OGS, on whether or not they can hire a person, then it probably takes another 6 to 8 months to hire somebody. I'm just like shaking my head. How do you get anything done while you got to work through this bureaucracy that we have here in the state of New York? First of all, you got to get it done anyway, because it is bureaucracy. And two, we have to create this agency because the tenet of the legislation is that you need the agency to set up the rules and the regulations, because we didn't regulate how this process would be legalized and happen for the state of New York. We just made it legal to happen. And so with them going through the regulatory steps that they've been taking, it's been a huge job. And honestly, I really do commend the chief executive director, Chris Alexander, and the team that he's put together to do so much with so little. They still are not fully staffed. And so there are a ton of issues that are left to be done to get the agency up to where it really should be. And I know that there are a lot of people working on that. I know the governor recently sent the commissioner of her OGS department over to specifically sit with them and try to figure out how they can be helpful. Seems like a no-brainer to me. The governor does have the full force of every agency in the state of New York, and I would say that anyone that has any agency that has anything to do with the work that has to happen at OCM at the end of the day, they all should be weighing in. They should all be sitting at the same table and coming up with ideas on how to make these things happen in a more expedient manner. But until that happens, because it is still government, I mean, some things you're not going to change about government. We'll have to be patient, and I'm still confident that they can get this done.
And I did want to ask about the appointment of the team by the governor. What is it that you expect or you hope to come out of this review?
Well, I expect the agency to be fully staffed, the board to be in collaboration with the agency to get people licensed and regulations in place. And at the end of the day, I expect that there will be hundreds of social equity applicants who have either a license for a dispensary, for processing, or for growing this product. And I believe that after we pass social equity, there will be tons of other licenses that will be available to people across the state of New York. One of the ideas around this, from my point of view, was, you know, not just to end the horrible war on drugs, which was just the worst thing ever.
Absolutely.
Cost government so much money to do what it did, to locking up people with small amounts of marijuana. Just a ridiculous notion. But the other piece of it was to create an economy in New York that would, you know, build New York's economy. And quite frankly, I think we have done that. The farmers, they did struggle because of the lawsuits and stores not being open. The processors, the cultivators, all these folks are in business now. And there's some, I want to say 80 or so legal licensed stores that are open. This is an opportunity to...
I'll correct you there. The last that I heard is 99.
99? Yes. Okay. Well, I'm liking 99. In progress, because the closer we get to 100 to over 100, the better. I think lose every other license you have by the state of New York because you're doing something illegal. That's some legislation that I'm hoping moves really quickly, because I think at some point someone has to say something to these people to understand what you're doing is not right. Not only is it illegal, but you're literally stealing from the communities that need the reinvestment because you're not paying taxes on it. And so I do believe that, you know, we're moving closer to understanding that this is all hands on deck and shutting down these illicit operators. Most people actually know where they're getting all the products from, but it's not from New York State, and it's not good. And so it's going to have to be shut down.
All right. And just to change a little bit, you know, the discussion about OCM being faster in its review of applications, issuances of licenses. You know, my understanding is that there are over 600 licenses for dispensary owners that have already been issued. But there's that big, huge gap between those that hold a license and their ability to then transform that license into an actual store. Now, part of this was supposed to be addressed by DASNY, as you know, Dormitory Authority of the State of New York. And there was a fund that was established by the governor, first with $50 million that the state put in, and then $150 that came in from a venture capital fund. Is it possible to somehow turn this money from, sort of turn the program around and instead issue grants to license holders or low interest loans to license holders and let them go out and secure the locations and build out their locations?
Well, anything is possible. But I would say at this stage in the budget, that's probably not something that will happen. It's not like there some people who aren't requesting it, because there are a lot of people who have license, but they don't have investment in order to get the business up and going. Also, I would say this, is that there are probably only 24 stores that are open that have been funded by the fund.
Right.
So the fund still does have resources in it as well. Why that's starting to move so slow? You know, there was a lot of shakeup when the former CEO left, and now there's an interim guy. And so this is all bureaucratic, and we're just trying to work through it all. And it's a slow process, but it's one that I think, again, that we're going to have all hands on deck in order to get done.
So how do you see the state of the market currently, and how far away is it from what you envision will be the ultimate, you know, sort of steady state?
What is the state of the market right now? Well, as I said, New York is still the largest market in the world, whether you're getting it from a legal store or an illegal store. But I do know that in just in my life, for the last, I would say, month or so, I've been at like 4 grand openings of stores where they're black and brown people. 2 of them happen to be women. Actually, 3 of them happen to be women, because the one here in Albany is a disabled veteran and her mm-hmm. son. And the others in Buffalo is an Asian woman and a Latino woman. And you just got to see the excitement on these people's face when they realize that, you know, they have finally gotten through all of the minutiae, the paperwork, the filings, and waiting for to hear from OCM and having them come in and do inspections and the fingerprints. You go through a lot to get a license in the state of New York to be able to manage or have one of these businesses. These people are totally excited, and it's going to bode well for them and their families. The only downside, again, to them being successful, in my estimation, Herb, is if we cannot shut down these illicit operators. And by the way, the illicit operators are organized people. These are not just your average mm-hmm. corner boys who just decided, I'm going to go get a storefront and set up. No, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about organized crime. From Asians, from Yemens, and in some cases, Russians. Mm. And it's so organized that it's going to be a challenge for anyone to deal with it unless everybody's doing it at the same time. And that's all law enforcement, all communities, and all state agencies have to be engaged in this. In some ways, I think the federal government could be engaged, although they probably didn't ever really want to see us legalize it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these stores that are illegal are being operated in buildings that still hold mortgages. The owner still has a mortgage on it, and that means it's still under FDIC. I mean, so there are a lot of regulations here that are being abused and used in order for this illicit market to proliferate. And somehow all of us have to come together and be able to work to figure out how to shut it down. I'm suggesting that the governor and her team come up with a task force of people just like that. This could probably be done in 6 months if people get serious about it.
Oh, very good.
So my last question, and maybe for me the toughest to ask, do you feel that the OCM leadership, the leadership that's gotten us to this point, is still the leadership that can take us forward to the industry that you envision?
I believe that. I believe that Chris Alexander, without question, is the person who can keep this thing not only going, but move it further. And honestly, I'm not sure what the status right now of Damian Fagan is. I know they had been on temporary leave, but that's unfortunate. And really, it's not fair to him, and it's not fair to the issue, and it's not fair to the work that we need to get done. He needs to be working in order to move things forward. And I'm hopeful that at the end of the day, the people on the second floor who are making these decisions will change their minds and realize that outside interests and advocates, and I don't want to call people's names specifically, so I want to be really mindful of how I put this, but
mm-hmm.
we got to let outside interests stop influencing what we need to do with this legislation. I'll just leave it at that.
No, and I think we need to continue to remind people of the unique nature of this legislation, just massive to create a new industry, but also to have this extremely unique focus on equity, you know, something that across the country was an add-on, in some cases an add-on years later on cannabis legislation. And here it was really front and center to what you created, what you helped to create.
Yep, you raise a very good point. When this legislation was first passed, people all over the country was like, wow, this is iconic that you can pass legislation that has it in the statute that you need 51% social equity and license, and that you need 40% of revenue shared in communities that have been disimpacted. So in a way, I think everything that we've been through in terms of the delays from what you hear in the media, and in some cases, even the court cases, have been to stop that, to make sure that that does not work. And so I'm adverse to when people want to stop me from doing things that I think are right. So I will be ready for the battle, but I need other people to be ready for the battle as well. and not be shifted one way or the other because of what's being said in the public or what's being said in the media or what kind of letters or, you know, calls that are coming into our offices. Because, as you know, members do get a lot of calls. And there must be some, I want to say 40 or 50 associations that have been started that have one specific area of this issue that they want to work on as advocates. And so they all have something to say. But at the end of the day, what's most important is this: the tenets of MARTA have to be upheld. And there has to be social equity. We will not be successful if we don't get 51% and 40% invested in our communities. Now, who gets the remaining percentages? That's up for the call of the government. That's up for the call of OCM to decide who gets the other licenses. I just know that there will be a brand new market that will be open for the people in the state of New York. It will benefit the people in New York State, not just in our ability to collect taxes and disseminate it to deliver services to our people, but in people's own ability to earn income. People are working in the state of New York as a result of MARTA. They're working in upstate New York. They're working in rural New York, and they're working in cities, New York, legally working and earning money and paying into this government. Now all we need to do is figure out how to stop the people who are doing it illegally, and I think we'd be good as gold.
Yeah, no, later this week, I'm having a discussion with a woman who is conducting jobs training for the cannabis industry. She has a 4-week program.
Oh, okay.
It's all free, and many of her trainees are formerly justice involved individuals. They're making from $18 to $25 an hour.
Yeah, I've been to dispensaries where most of the people hired in them are returning citizens. And they've been trained on the job. And so I commend a young lady that's working on that. By the way, you know, there are multiple higher ed institutions across the state of New York who have curriculums in their schools on how to be prepared for this growing industry. And the industry doesn't necessarily just impact people who want a license. There are tons of people working around legal cannabis that didn't have to apply for a license at all. Some of them are lawyers, they're advertising, they're marketing, they're doing all sorts of things that would not have been possible had MARTA not passed. Now, I will say this finally, if you add up the number of stores in the state of New York that are social equity, meaning they're Black, brown, or disabled veterans, you will not find anything that looks like that anywhere else in the country.
Yep.
And I want to say there is at least 18 or 20 states that already had been legal before we became legal. You put every single one of their social equity numbers together, it will not meet what we've done here in New York State. So, by the way, we've already succeeded, but we have so much more room to succeed so much more. And we just got to keep pushing forward.
All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. So I just want to thank you again. It's been a great honor to have this time with you. You know, we're talking about the third anniversary of the MRTA, and I also, you know, would like to give my condolences on the upcoming second anniversary of the horrible tragedy, the shooting in Buffalo, and your leadership at the time was so tremendous. So thank you for that as well.
Yeah, that's still a very difficult thing to deal with. What happened in Buffalo 514 will never be forgotten. Ever. And it's not like as Black people, we have not traditionally, historically been used to people hating us so much that they just want to kill you. But for it to happen 2 years ago, right in the middle of my district, you can't explain the hurt that comes with that. There is still a lot of healing that needs to go on behind it, and we're still working through that. But it will never, ever be forgotten.
Again, my condolences and thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure. Next, I am pleased to introduce Beatrice Stein in her organization, Hospitality Pathways. Much of the media coverage focuses on cannabis licenses, but as I alluded to in my conversation with the majority leader, there are many more jobs this new industry will provide. Hospitality Pathways provides free job training for those interested in becoming bud tenders. Also, I'd like to specifically call out an auction that her nonprofit is conducting. Listen for that information. Welcome, Beatrice. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Harv. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Well, we're excited to have you. Thank you very much. So can you talk a little bit about Hospitality Pathways and the work that your organization is doing?
Absolutely. So Hospitality Pathways is a nonprofit that does training in a very specific lane for budtenders. So I come from the hospitality industry and recognize that there was a direct connection between the skill set that a budtender needs and the same skill set that we used to teach in restaurants for service staff. And so that's how the program got started. It is a four-week program. It's 80 plus hours of training. Wow. And the students go through a myriad of things. They get two certifications. One is with Greenflower, a dispensary associate certification. And that takes them through cannabis knowledge from literally from seed to sale. They learn about flower, cannabinoids, endocannabinoid system, terpenes, different methods of consumption, onset, duration, just everything you need to know about cannabis, seed to sale. And then the other certification is a responsible vendor. In order, they need to know how to properly card people, all the New York regulations, how safety and security, what needs to happen in the dispensary environment for a safe and secure environment. So those are the two certifications they get. Then we bring in subject matter experts to kind of deep dive on topics. For example, when we do the module about endocannabinoid system, then we bring in a licensed cannabis pharmacist who then talks about the body and how the body and cannabis are lock and key and the whole entourage system and all of that. So they have those kind of conversations with them. They get a terpene class where they get to smell the terps and try to identify them, which is really fun. So the subject matters come in and just really deep dive on those topics. Like I said, I come from hospitality, so we take the knowledge that they have, and then we kind of combine that with how to have impactful interactions with guests. What is hospitality? What does it look like and feel like as a budtender and for the guest? And what are the questions you need to ask to kind of have that really guide the guest to where they want to be, right? It's very different than selling food or beverage. This is people could have a good experience and they could have a bad experience. And you don't want them to go home and not understand what they have and not understand what they're taking and have a bad experience. So it really is a lot of knowledge and communication in that hospitality aspect. The other things that we do is we go on farm tours. We go upstate to see two farms and get to see the grows and their processing processes, which is probably the favorite days of everyone. The bus tour, maybe not, but the actual farms, yes. And then we visit different dispensaries around the city, medical and recreational, obviously only licensed. We don't look at anything that isn't licensed. And then we work on their soft skills to prepare them for the work environment. So time management, teamwork, conflict resolution, things like that. We help them with resume and interviewing skills. We introduce them to employers, but we don't guarantee employment. But we do everything we can to help them get jobs. And our budtenders end up in dispensaries around the five boroughs, and they are the most requested budtenders and the highest sellers. So the program is working in that way.
I know that sounds like an incredibly rich program. So what is your typical candidate look like? Age range, prior history with cannabis, justice involvement.
Yeah, absolutely. We get quite a range. Most of our students are unemployed, and all of them are Black and Brown. We have a mixture of male, female, and those that I identify as they, them. And the age range, they have to be 21 to get in the program. So that's number one. And then,
and that's not your rule. That's a New York State requirement.
It's a state requirement, so it's silly for anybody under 21 to be in it, because then they wouldn't be able to get the job that they're training for. But yeah, in order to handle product and to be guest interactive, you must be 21 years old. You can work in a dispensary at 18, but that's like cleaning and maintenance. You're not product or guest involved. So I'd say the oldest graduate we've had is probably 45. So between 21 and 45, and most run between 21 and early 30s. And then our students come from all five boroughs, and they come from community-based organizations that are trying to help their populations, like NYCHA, Urban Upbound, Henry Street Settlement, Drive Change, all of these types of organizations. We partner about 30, 35 different organizations that where recruitment comes from. I would say more than half of our students are most definitely formerly incarcerated, justice impacted, and really from communities that are most highly impacted by the war on drugs. So that's the kind of the range of people that that are our students and graduates.
And where do your instructors come from? I know you described, again, a very intensive, rich program. So these folks need to have a lot of experience.
Exactly. So a lot of the subject matter experts come from the cannabis community, obviously, like the pharmacist that comes to talk about the endocannabinoid system is working in either at Etain, which is one of our partners, or Cannabist. We, sort of alternate who's available. Cannabis Workforce Initiative, CWI, which helps us with a lot of the cannabis knowledge. They also are partners of ours, help us with funding, and they come and help and deep dive on that. And then the other kind of subject matter experts come from a lot of the vendors come and talk about their products, and they get product knowledge and also, knowledge about the plant and other things from them. So they come from all over the cannabis sort of community. Because I come from hospitality, I have a huge network of HR people in hospitality. So they help me with kind of the softer skill thing, teamwork, resumes, interviewing skills, things like that. So, and everybody who comes to talk to class volunteers their time. They're very generous with their time and energy. So we greatly appreciate that. Yeah.
No, and I know when you run a nonprofit, you call on your friends, call on your family, and everybody has to pitch in. So that sounds great.
A lot. Yes. Yeah. I also want to mention, because I didn't mention it before, that we pay our students to learn.
That's tremendous.
Because I think that's important.
It is very important.
Yeah. It is. A lot of people talk about social equity, but you have to give people the tools that they need. And so that's one thing that we realized from the very beginning. So we give the students a $200 a week stipend. So that's $800 over the 4 weeks. Every Monday, we give them a weekly unlimited MetroCard so they don't have to stress about how to get to and from class. Monday MetroCard day is a very happy day for everybody. And then every day we give them a meal because we do have some students who are food insecure.
Wow, that's tremendous.
And not a crappy meal. They're like, wow, good meals. Yeah. I ask them what their allergies are. We accommodate all allergies. I got the hospitality gene. I got to carry it all along through everything.
No, and I think one of the things that has been missing in the discussion in New York State is about the jobs, right? I mean, everything is focused on the licenses, but not everyone is going to be able to get a license, as we know. And we're looking at some of the estimates that you may have more up-to-date estimates, but, over 60,000 jobs in the next year or two, 25,000 jobs just in New York City. So it's really is a growth field, which I assume is one of the reasons that you moved over from hospitality and the restaurant and hotel industries.
Right. It's interesting. When I first started this, I would get maybe 100 people applying. The first class, I think I had 60 people apply. Then it got to 100, 125. We just graduated a cohort in March. That class, we had 865 people apply, 8 times what we've had from the previous class.
Incredible.
It shows you the desire for this knowledge and also for these jobs.
So let's, talk a little bit more about the jobs and the range of jobs that people are able to get and transition into as they gain more experience.
Right.
So what's that been like so far? And I know you were involved in the very first cannabis dispensary that opened in New York City.
Right, right. Our first class was in November of 2022, before any dispensaries had opened. They had estimated that they were going to open by the end of the year, but it didn't look good. Well, one did open, which was Housing Works, and one of our graduates got a job there. And within 30 days, he was moved up into a sales lead because he had more knowledge than anybody else. Mm. And his managers were going to him to ask him questions because he was so well educated. So that says a lot for our program. But that was hard to place people for that because they were so limited. And then the lawsuits came and it was hard. One other student from that first class went to work at Etain, which is a medical. She's the only person that took a job with medical, but she's been there since more than a year. So she's very happy there. Now, this year, there's way more dispensaries, so way more opportunity. Just this last class that we graduated, we had 8 different dispensaries come to our job fair that we're currently hiring. Actually, 6 that we're currently hiring and 2 were from who already have graduates who are adding more staff. Mm. So they came back. They came back for this job fair. And what was great about that is the 2 dispensaries that came back that already have 3 students each, they came back with a graduate who helped do the interviewing. So it became full circle, which is really great. Yeah. So the jobs are, we're training specifically for budtender, but they can also do delivery. They can do fulfillment. They can do inventory. They can do all of those things. We did partner with Dutchie this last time. And so they have POS knowledge. So they have lots of opportunities within the realm of things. Do have a few candidates that are really interested in cultivation, but that's upstate and they have to then make the decision. Do they want to move? Do they want to do that? But most everybody wants to work kind of in the borough where they live, closer to home, or easily, you know, get into Manhattan if they're not in Manhattan. But now that Brooklyn is starting to pick up a pace a little bit here, I think we'll have some more graduates working in Brooklyn. But yeah,
that's my home borough.
So yeah, they've got lots of opportunities. There you go.
Now, you talked about the payments and the Metro cards to the trainees.
Yes.
Is there a cost to the trainees?
No, absolutely not. It is absolutely free to the students. Everything we do is as a nonprofit is raise money. So we're running right now an online auction and we have like 60 different items, farm tours, terp class, all kinds of food and beverage stuff, kind of combined of my world of people and connections, some wellness stuff. Actually, we have a graduate who put up some artwork. A wide variety of things. So go to Give Butter, Green Futures Auction.
Well, I mean, and that's tremendous, but I'm not sure whether, you're going to raise enough money for a program like this on an auction. Yeah. Do you currently have any contracts with the city or the state to support the work that you're doing? Is that a possibility?
You know, it's very interesting. The city and the state are just kind of figuring out the cannabis jobs are good jobs because they have this list of what is good jobs. And just so you know, hospitality jobs are not considered good jobs with the city and the state. The cannabis isn't really on their radar. They're just starting to figure it out. I've had a couple of conversations with some people. I actually had a conversation with someone from the mayor's office yesterday. So I think it's starting, but it's not there yet. It's not on their radar yet. And I think because the industry start and stop because of the lawsuits, they didn't see the potential of the growth yet. Now that more dispensaries are opening, there's more people interested. I mean, just the number of 8 times what applied for me has got to be on their radar. And I'm one little, training person. CWI, Cannabis Workforce Initiative, is state funded, and they have been generous with us, but we actually piecemeal pretty much every class that we do. So the March class just finished, and I have a little bit of money for another class, but this auction is hopefully to raise money to do another class. Then I have to figure out another way to find the money for each class. nobody's giving me big dollars, which is a shame because I could really plan a whole year of programming and really, really make a difference. But right now I'm just piecemealing it together.
Well, I mean, since we're there, how can someone support Hospitality Pathways? You know, whether it's an individual or someone maybe in government who's interested in
right.
in this area.
Absolutely. Reach out to me directly. I am the founder, director, and the sole employee. So I do everything, and fundraising is not my area of expertise. So any help with that is always welcome. Each cohort costs about $50,000. We'd like to do a minimum of 6 cohorts a year. Last year, we were able to do 3. This year, again, we're trying to find funding. We've got, you know, we're struggling for funding. So funding is big. Any kind of funding dollars are very helpful. And you can go to our website, which is hospitalitypathways.org. There's a donate button if you want to give individually. And then also our auction is live. And until it ends at 11:45 p.m. on 4/20. So check out all the items and donate there at least. And you can obviously give as much money as you want. You don't have to just do the auction. You can just donate.
Well, that's terrific. What kind of items are on the auction right now? I know you mentioned the artwork from one of your graduates.
Yeah. We have a couple of farm tours for, you can bid on a farm tour of Heirloom, which is upstate, Hudson Cannabis, MFNY. We have a terp class. We've got a couple of chef's dinners with Hawaii Mike and Chef for Hire. There's Laburna Den, a dinner, wine dinner for 2. Eli's Table, there's a wine dinner for 4. There's Skip the Line for Glacé, which is a really hot Upper East Side hot chocolate. And it has a 2-hour line, so you get to skip the line. You can bid on that. That's a good one. 2 dozen cupcakes from Magnolia. So kind of a wide range. And then we've got a bunch of wellness things, shopping in the Green Market, and then how to prepare meals with Chef Dai. Some astrological readings, a massage, some yoga stuff. So, and then artwork from, like I said, student and friends, photography, all just a wide variety of stuff. So you can't go wrong.
And again, the website is?
For the auction, it's Give Butter Green Futures Auction. Or you can just go to our website, hospitalitypathways.org, and there's a link to the auction.
Terrific. And that sounds easier. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Best of luck with the auction and best of luck with your next series of cohorts. And we'll check in again and see how the auction went.
Fantastic. Right? Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with some of the coolest people in New York City government, Tashita Dawson, founding director of Cannabis NYC, and Jeffrey Garcia, executive director of the Office of Nightlife. In addition, we'll have one of our more formidable dispensary owners. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. It helps new listeners find the show. Joint Session is produced by me, Herb Barbeau, with additional production and engineering by Matt Patterson, with Rebecca Malpica on digital marketing and social media. In addition, thank you to Cannabis Wire. You can find us on Instagram at jointsession.pod, that's one word, jointsession.pod, and on LinkedIn at Joint Session Podcast. Thank you.